Clubhouse.
Welcome back to our continuing coverage of Beacon 23's second season. This is for the third episode. This is Paul with Pod Clubhouse, and I'm joined once again by the other two hosts in this Beacon, Gabby and Inez. How are you guys doing tonight?
Hello, we're fired up.
Yeah, this other one is just fine. How about you, other one?
How'd you like meeting kind of all the different little beacons with their beacon numbers? And
I like the beacon network, the hive.
They're IMing each other.
I love it.
Yeah, it is really cute. I mean, I don't know, Inez, once you said it like that, it's just now it's like super cute to me. They're just like happy little bumblebees.
Yeah.
I was taking it seriously and now I think it's so precious.
They're like Inez IMing her friend. Binary codes in college.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Good. All right. Well, before we dive in, let's recap on what occurred in the last episode. First, we see Harmony has to go to corporate. She's got her badge, desk, binary typewriter, and 1980s rotary phone. Perfect match for an AI. She faces internal affairs made up of these three entities, presumably seeking errors. While Harmony figures that out, Halen tries to keep Beacon 23 afloat by seemingly destroying it bit by bit. Eventually, Harmony kicks ass and destroys her prison guards, leading her to finally connect with Halen. We learn she is trapped within the Beacon 23 system. And that brings us to where we are in Episode 3. Sort of. This one picks up in a totally different space, Beacon 67, one that looks a lot more put together than Beacon 23 ever was. What did you guys think of the way that they set Beacon 67 in contrast to either, I mean, anyone else that we've seen with the Asian-influenced decor? Next to my notes for this, I wrote, New Keeper plays clarinet, comma, feng shui.
Well, if I could go first, then, yeah, the opening scene had a really nice lighting and had a very nice vibe. So it definitely seemed...
It was warmer, wasn't it?
Yes. I thought, like, this is very habitable. Like, that's not something I've experienced yet.
People can live here. Yay.
Yeah. It was so weird. I was not watching the same TV show. Definitely more modern. And it made me wonder how long she had lived there personally, like for her mission. And it was the first time that I'd seen an oven. And seeing an oven being used.
How did you do this?
Well, I have my ways. The oven. I use the oven.
But the oven's always been there, right? Like, yeah, we just apparently learned that everybody just likes their food printed.
Or they don't know what they don't know. They just saw it as like a cubby.
Yeah, you think they don't know how to cook because food can be printed?
Could very well be.
But, I mean, I did have a question about, like, how, like, where were the ingredients?
I bet you have to print the ingredients,
she brings them. Yeah, okay. So it's easy.
They
have that little hydroponic area.
Like, it's sourdough bread. Isn't there, like, a whole, like, thing about sourdough that you can literally keep, like, the mama jar, like, going and make sourdough on, like, forever? I don't know. I've only kind of, like, passively heard about this. My coworker had something like this. So she, what is it called? You guys know what I'm talking about, right?
All I know is sourdough takes a very long time to make. It's not a negligible amount of time. Yeah. It's a big deal.
Okay. Well, I was just thinking about like Detective Boyle on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. That's where I got some of my sourdough in a jar that lasts for like decades, family generations kind of thing. And so what if she just knows how to continuously harvest this sourdough from like wherever it was? But also could be that she just printed out the ingredients. It's probably more plausible like that. But I like to think that she's disciplined enough to have that tradition rolling.
I mean, how does she have the time? But no, I guess you're right. You're right, whatever.
All the time. She has all the time.
I don't know. I feel like her AI would have said something about like, she's like, you're wasting time talking to some guy or some other computer chatting as a pen pal. Like, I think she'd be like, you need to stop just doughing bread. Stop kneading this. Stop fermenting it.
Maybe. But it's a good thing it's just an AI. But I want to just say like, from the decor and the setting and everything. I really loved walking in. You guys nailed it. It is very warm, cozy, especially after all the trauma we three have gone through with Beacon 23 in season one and season two. It really kind of brought me back to one of the Beacon Keepers that we saw in season one. What was her name? Agnes?
Sophie?
What's the one? Sophie. Oh, Sophie. Yes, Sophie with her, the drapes and everything. Just like really intentional about keeping her vibe. And I saw that this character, Iris, also, or was at this point, she's B67, keeping a home that has like greenery. And I really enjoyed that.
Yeah. But it seemed more modern than Sophie's. I noticed that too, that it reminded me of Sophie's Beacon House. But this was, it had better lights, it had more plants, she had a better life, it seemed. One interesting thing, though, she was praying and like meditating to her grandmother to like bless the food. I enjoyed this touch.
This enduring representation of religion, even into the far future?
Sure, but it kind of, you know, it switched it up because it's more of like her ancestor, right? But it gave me perspective, I think. I know that in Chinese culture, like they call for blessings from their ancestors and family members, but I found it really interesting that it seemed like her grandmother, right, isn't just like super ancient. Like it seemed like a picture that we had. So what year was the grandmother's picture taken?
That's a good point. Yeah, a lot of times when they show, they being Hollywood, shows settings in the far future, we've kind of abandoned photographs for some other, you know, snazzier holograms or whatever. But you're right. Like there was the lighthouse photo earlier in this show, and now there's this photo. Interesting. We've had some conjecture, I guess, about the nature of time in this period where people might have very different lifespans than we're used to because of like the sleep that they go into for travel or faster approaching light speed travel or whatever. So grandma might have lived a long, long time ago.
Yes. I don't know. That's what I love about this show is that everything does have me questioning a lot, but not in a, I don't know, left dumbfounded way. It's like a mystery. And even when I don't think that I get a direct answer at the end, I'm intrigued. Keeps my attention.
Today, we got a comment on our Facebook post for the season one finale where the commenter, Dale Downing, says that ... And then they change the entire direction and plot in season two. They don't even match up. Any idea why? Is the book like this? What do you think of that kind of comment where we're talking about the change from the mystery of the artifact from last season to this, at least in the starting point here, we're talking more like survival and getting our friends back, like Harmony and meeting new friends, kind of starting over, almost like a soft reboot on the story and what it's about for this season.
We did mention this last season. We said this could go two ways, right? It could pick up where we left off and then answer all the questions we had, or it could start over and be a show that's about the beacon and not so much the people on the beacon. I think that it's marrying the two concepts, but just a little bit further, like swing into the show is about the beacon and the things that happen around there. And so I'm not surprised at all. And I do anticipate that they are going to fill in a lot of gaps. Because again, when we're watching this show, it seems to kind of be in like the first person perspective. You know, we don't have like a narrator or extra information happening.
Not usually, And even the
flashbacks are like on the beacon. So I'm definitely not surprised. And I think that like maybe being patient and going with it is going to fill in some of those gaps. I guess that's how I feel. But what do you think, Inez? I mean, what do you think, other one?
Is it like the Cat in the Hat with thing one and thing two?
Yes, but
you put us here, Paul.
I mean, think one and thing two are cool. They got
you stripped my identity from me.
The other one. No, there's no stripping. It is our identity. I am happy here.
We have to remember that this is just episode 3 and the major incidents just occurred, right? Like we went from season finale 1. And then the episode in season 2 starts right at that same spot. Immediately. So I think we just need time, right? We just need time to kind of see the chaos of what has happened as a result of the things that we saw occur then. I don't know about like completely abandoning the first storyline. I can definitely see people being really frustrated by the end of episode 3, not having a clue about what really is going on with these fucking rocks. So, you know, because that was a lot of murdering that occurred in season 1 for this. And I think we can't just buy that him sending her blasting those rocks like is gonna be the end of it. It's just so left field. But I feel like I haven't been really upset about it too much because I'm living in the moment, people.
Have to be in the moment. Yeah,
I'm living in the moment. These things are just happening. We saw episode 3, he tells her go look outside at this point, and then we see that big explosion, which I'm positive is the explosion that happened in episode 1.
Yeah.
And then she immediately leaves and then starts the mission about what this episode is about. So it's not a lot of time. I'll acknowledge and validate the frustration of not even giving me any bones here, and I don't buy the ending that you gave me in episode 1.
So just believe. Just have faith.
You know who might be able to help address questions like that?
Who, Paul?
Head writer and showrunner Glenn Mazzara. That's who.
Ooh.
Yeah, if only we could have a chat with him, though. Gosh, good question to ask.
It will be when we get to talk to him.
Who is we, Paul?
Three hosts and a beacon. Paul and the other ones.
Paul and the others.
Oh, man.
Do we have, like, celebratory soundbite to overlay here,
I got it. Bow, 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 bow.
That's a perfect one. It's timeless.
That's super exciting. So he is confirmed.
He is semi-confirmed, maybe. But we will talk to him this season amongst other people involved with production. We've got a yes from Natasha Mumba, who plays Harmony, and we've got contact made with several other people, including production designers and composers, and we'll have a lot more content this season of the podcast from official sources related directly to the show.
Yay! Oh my gosh, that is so exciting. What a beautiful show, and what an amazing opportunity. I'm ecstatic.
That is the right response. And as you need to live up
other
to that.
Other one, do better.
I'm stunned, guys. I'm just stunned. I'm stuck in my tracks here. No, I'm really, really thrilled, super excited. When you sent us the text, Paul, letting us know what an opportunity is presented before us, like, you know, you saw my little digital meltdown.
That was real, not AI. Because I just found out about this right now, live on the air. So.
Oh, yes, of course.
She's sitting in her own pee because she got so excited.
Right now.
That's how dedicated she is. She didn't even mention it.
She's just extra warm and fuzzy now. Yes.
Exactly.
Should have gotten my Depends.
That's the only way to podcast, really.
In your Depends.
Yeah. Or some sort of refrigeration suit.
All right, let's
move away from the diaper talk. You got it.
Yes, please.
You got it. Okay, so we meet B67. That's how I referred to Beacon 67, aka Iris, for the first half of my notes. This episode, like I mentioned off air, was a great tonal shift from what we've been getting so far, kind of like the chaotic nature of Halen's just existence, you know, bouncing from one thing to another, killing things when he gets there.
That's so sad.
And then tearing the beacon apart, or
his sad eyes.
Sad eyes, yeah. Harmony having to live through HR purgatory in last week's episode. And this, we get a whole half an episode of just a woman who is 100% committed and built for Beacon life. How did you guys like seeing that new perspective on the way things can be? There are people that aren't scratching each other's eyes out just to get by. There's a person who is actually just perfectly happy doing what she's doing in this universe.
Well, that person is Ellen Wong. And first off, she's an amazing actress. It was super fun watching. However, she's also an ambitious character, sir. So I loved finally having this perspective. That's what you need. Being a beacon holder, a beacon keeper is a calling, Paul. She educated me in this episode and I was very, very pleased.
It was a new perspective. She didn't say, oh, I got stuck with this job or no one likes me in my normal life, so I have to do this. She made it sound like, no, I've always wanted to do this and I'm here very much on purpose.
Yeah, she's got a career track. Grandma mentioned that what are the actions she needs to do to achieve becoming admiral?
Oh, is Jiang the grandma?
I didn't think so. I thought Jiang was the AI and
yeah, that's what I got.
Was just the picture.
That's what
no,
I got.
No, she mentioned it to Halen.
I thought there was like a comma there. That she had Jiang, comma, my grandma, comma, the other keepers.
Wait, what do you mean? Like naming the name and then like Inez, comma, my sister, comma?
No, I thought it was like Jiang is the AI. She didn't say Jiang the AI. She said like Jiang and then her grandmother. I feel like she listed three things.
See, it's interesting how it's confusing it is because Jiang was as kind of nagging as an elder might be.
Yeah, that's what made sense to me. That immediately made that connection. You know, I follow some of these Asian groups on social media just to kind of keep my foot in about where my culture is. So anyway, but this is a recurring theme that comes up is like the nagging of the elderly, of their grandparents and the parents and whatnot. So when I saw this and I heard her mention, you know, her AI and then said a name and then my grandmother, I assumed that she was naming that the AI was intentionally built for the personality of like her grandmother. And it nags and talks and gives us steps just like an elderly would. So I think that that is meant to be her grandmother's personality.
Gosh, nag. I wouldn't use the word nag.
Oh, I would.
Use, like hold accountable. Help.
Yeah.
I don't know. Jiang was up her butt every 5 minutes.
I mean,
why aren't you doing your work? Aren't you doing your work? What's wrong with your work? Are you sick?
The yeah, AI okay. also still has a job to ISA. So
exactly. That's where I thought that from. I wasn't thinking like, oh, yeah, she programmed the AI. I mean, I'm sure that the AI is adapted to her and she's very cultured and like in touch with her roots. And so that's why the AI picked up on that. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see where it takes us. We'll see if they answer whether her grandmother was made in AI form.
I don't think that they're going to come back and circle and give us this specific answer. Well, I think that this...
We're in the present.
Statistically, this has got to be the grandmother. We'll ask. We'll ask Glenn, okay?
We'll do that. We'll clear
That'll
that
be
right
your
up.
Question.
The mentioning of the admiral, the aspiration to become admiral, that came up in her IM chat with Beacon 174.
Hey, you've got to follow the rules if you're going to be admiral one day.
I thought that was an interesting admission since she wouldn't tell her name and she was so afraid of, you know, intimate contact or whatever. The hopes and dreams of becoming the boss. I wonder if that falls into that area or I wrote in my notes, does he know something about her that is fishy? You know what I mean? Like he's not supposed to, but he does.
Are you saying that you think that it's participating in intimate relations by telling him that she is ambitious?
Well, she was so careful about other aspects of it. And so it just stood out to me that he said a very specific aspiration. And I don't know if he would know that given their kind of contact.
I don't believe that sharing your career ambitions is necessarily violates intimacy types of rules. I've worked in corporate for a very long time and it's kind of like a constant conversation to like help encourage each other.
Yeah.
And we keep being competitive or keep learning from each other to keep making those forward steps from a career perspective. And that still can all be done without it being like an intimate thing. So I don't necessarily think that that was violating rules, especially with how strict that she did end up holding on to when it came to saying her name and that inner struggle that she has. Because, you know, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter how ambitious you are. She is a human being. We talked about it all season one long about like this need for connection. There was kind of this underlying message about like needing human connection and what this kind of solitude life like does for them. And then the fact that they have to be set up as basically like just super soldiers, even though they're not soldiers, but have to kind of suppress the human nature part to be this beekeeper.
Just to add to that, though, Paul, I personally was also suspicious about their conversation, and I am not really sure. I mean, immediately I thought that maybe he's part of the process, part of the testing. Is that actually a person? Or, you know, she has, they mentioned that she has her, what's it called? They're getting evaluated, right?
Right, right. She's up for evaluation for a promotion that keeps coming up.
What I got from this was that she's going to be evaluated. Maybe he was going to be evaluated if he's really another keeper, right? Because the competitive edge between each other, I guess, maybe there's like an application and then a process and then a certain amount of time. So maybe they're both in the know for that reason. However, I was suspicious immediately and I was kind of doubting that this is actually like a person. And I thought, has the evaluation already started? Because she kept getting distracted while she was talking to him. And so I personally felt like she was constantly being tested. And I did not think that this was a real person. And I did think that when he kind of dropped the, well, you're trying to go for Admiral stuff, I felt like that had to have been just like part of some program that was testing her. And she might be like having some hiccups or maybe even failing the process. And that being said, when she did make it to Beacon 23 and this system thing or other person on the other end found out, I think that maybe they're the ones, who came to visit on Beacon 23. And, you know, Harmony said it wasn't a life form. So,
yeah.
There was no life form detected.
She's still recovering it. It's a processing error.
It's not an error. I've scanned for human life. There's none. But I have detected something else.
Well, we got a little wrinkle and some world building here that we had suspected going back to last season, which was that we'd wonder what the relationship was between QTA and ISA. And she just says it. QTA founded the beacon system, but ISA took it over and runs it. So she was very sus when they started getting QTA emails saying, don't look over at Beacon 23. Everything's fine, because that shouldn't happen in their internal system. It'd be like getting an email from an outside company in your company email telling you everything's fine. Don't look over here. So the fact that they can penetrate their system to send internal comms, and QTA's Olive is QTA. Wah, wah, wah. And she openly hates the guy. There might be a Google alert in Olive's system for that kind of thing.
Yeah, quite possibly. Gosh, so what I really appreciated, though, about that, you know, the comms and her reaching out to the other beacon keepers, I really loved how they didn't, like, bat an eye at it.
QTA confirmed. B-23 situation handled. B-52.
On standby until further QTA update. B-266.
They're like, oh, yeah, it's handled. And it showed you the contrast, right? Or it reminded you of the contrast. Like, some people are there just like potentially hating their lives or just having like other priorities elsewhere because they're not trying to move up. So what is beacon keeping if you're not doing it for a greater purpose? It's like torture. It's what Halen describes it as. And so I feel like we got to see two sides of the same coin. You know, you have the ambitious one, you know, her, where she's right there in the middle. Or right there at the beginning, and then you have everyone else who, or not everyone else, but some other person who knows how long they've been keeping up with it, but they don't like care that QTA is infiltrating. Maybe they're like here for the drama and just want to, you know, keep their head down. So I don't know. What I like about this show is that it implies a lot. You're not blatantly explained or told much other than, you know, what she explained to us in this episode and with the QTA relationship with ISA. So I did appreciate that. But it's just nice little clues and hints about the outside world that keep popping in. And so that was one thing that I thought was really funny, that she was very suspicious and immediately took action and was very honorable about it. I'm sure a lot of that has to do with her culture and her tradition. But I wish that we could meet the other beacon keepers because they seem pretty chill.
Paul,
yeah.
What were your initial reactions or impression of Beacon 174?
First of all, assigning a male voice in her head to that was interesting. I guess we're just supposed to maybe understand that she figured that out already.
Or just like in her mind.
Or maybe she's just hopeful. Yeah, that's, I think that's more what it is, right? She's wants it to be this opposite sex connection. And so there it is. Yeah, the whole interaction, I felt sad for her that she was pinning so much on this as her form of interaction, because there's nothing confirmable about what's happening here. It could be ChatGPT that she's talking to for all she knows.
Is that what you thought it was? Did you suspected it was an AI instead of another human?
No, I'm just playing devil's advocate.
Well, Gabby and I already, I mean, so I align like with what Gabby was saying, like I didn't have full confidence that this was like ever from the very beginning. I feel like I was sus because that's just like my normal status now on Olive on the Loose. Right. And then two, he's like, go look outside the window at this thing. And then I'm like, that's Halen's explosion at Beacon 23.
Right. How would he know?
Right. Like, why is he like, oh, come look at this. It's so pretty. And this is just my gift to you. You know, and I'm like, this guy is not a guy. This is not who we think it is. This is something else. I like the angle that it could be this assessment already happening when you don't know the assessment's happening. So it's kind of like pre-vetting, you know, your failures of how you're going to interact with it. But I feel like it's definitely something more now that when he did that, when he pointed her to this explosion, how did he know? How did he know?
A stupid sci-fi explanation would be that his beacon is closer. And yeah. So given the speed of light... He saw it first.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see. But she's beacon 67. He's beacon 174. Do you think that they would have them grid in a logical kind of way to where...
No, I don't.
So 23 not going to be closer to 67 than it is to 174?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think it's what Paul said. And I don't think so.
So he's just like, ooh, look at this, look at this big shiny thing. Way. And like, it doesn't, like, no concern whatsoever.
Otherwise, you have to go along with what you're saying, which is perfectly possible that it is some manifestation of Olive or maybe another AI, some other kind of AI, given that we don't have life signs at the very end, but we're led to believe that that is who is coming to visit at Beacon 23 with the cliffhanger ending.
And they made it through all of that. So that's, you know, incredibly impressive. For a human to do.
We'll get to that part at the end with his approach or its approach or their approach or whatever to the beacon. But yeah, now you got me thinking.
You're welcome.
What if it is like another like entity, but it's not human? Maybe it's like very, you know, the cyborgy people, like Halen's a cyborgy kind of guy, biomechanical parts and whatnot. But like, what if it's like something like that, but not necessarily like human or I don't know,
alive? That's not a life form.
I know. I'm just trying to like throw something else out there possibly, but it's not a theory that I'm like married to.
Like
just trying to think about like what else could possibly it be if it's not going to be like a AI thing and it's not going to be.
It's Dark Matter's baby.
It's Rocky.
There you go.
It's Rocky, yeah. Well, we've seen that the level of technology includes full AI manifestations that can basically do whatever they want. With minimal adherence to the laws of physical reality. And we've also seen that people have adapted their bodies, like with Finch and then the other pirate hacker from earlier that needed like that long sausage tube to interface with the computer.
Yes.
And Halen.
Yes.
And Halen, right, with the military grade built-in augmentations. So the idea that there could be something more like a full cyborg conversion, you know, where it's basically like a ghost in the machine sort of thing, a brain in a robot shell, that wouldn't qualify so much as a life form, but still function as a person in space.
All right. So a possible third option of what could be happening.
I'm just
on
making
the
that up.
174. No. Yeah, that's great. That's what we're here for. You know, just like what else could it be if not this? So if that part doesn't work out, it just means the higher probability is that we've gotten some kind of AI thing.
You know, I thought it was kind of interesting too, like, what is going on with this girl? Because she went into some deep daydreaming, you know, when she went on this date.
Yeah, with like the dress and like the booth and the none of it being real.
It made me wonder how long she was kind of zoning out and why she's zoning out so much.
But you suppose there's like a conflict, like she can tell Halen that she's built for this and enjoys kind of basking in the honor of that. But in reality, when the first chance came along to go see what was up at another beacon, against Jiang's better advice, she was like, nah, even though I don't fly that well, I'm going to go fly somewhere, especially through this red cloud of asteroids floating floating around. I'm going to go do that.
Impressive for failing three times.
Yeah, well, I figured that she must have passed on that fourth try, right? They wouldn't let you have the beacon without passing, I'm sure.
You're right.
Sure.
She upskilled and
assume that that meant that she still was not pilot qualified, but that makes more sense, Paul.
Yeah, she did qualify.
She did qualify in the end. Okay, yeah, I'm an idiot.
That's why we're just others.
I want to address like what you were comment you were saying, Gabby, and I find it interesting coming from you specifically because you are really have shared about like how when you're hungry and whatnot and you can't eat something, like you can manifest like the smell and the taste of something and then that soothes your stomach down. And me, I'm a loner. I am a homebody troll. I am a Cancer who does not like leaving her shell. So I also get really good at creating like an environment in my mind, and it really reframes like the way I experience like my surroundings right here. And I like also staying in my mind because I can see things super detailed, very, very vivid imagery and smells, and I can feel the feelings, like the actual like physical tactile kind of feelings if I focus enough on it. So I think maybe part of like her training could have also been like exercising this part of her brain that helps her thrive in this environment to where she can take her job really seriously and also find the balance that helps reset that piece of it. But it's so vivid that it might take her a little bit longer kind of snap back. But I don't think an unreasonable amount of time anymore of when somebody's like, hey, Inez, you just stopped talking randomly. And I'm like, oh, it's enough time to notice, but not enough time to like make a big difference in my physical environment in real life.
So Inez, you said you made a comment though right now. You just said that like people have to snap you back in when you, so are you saying you start daydreaming in the middle of a sentence? Is that what you were?
Yeah. I have a lot of things that like roll through my mind. Sometimes like when I'm in the middle of talking, I've done it a lot on this show. I just kind of like teeter off and all of a sudden realize I have no idea where I am or what's going because I was in the middle of like a really vivid conversation or reflection or trigger of something in my mind.
Oh, the ADHD. Gotcha.
Yes.
Okay. Right. So you're saying she has severe ADHD?
I'm just saying that she has spent time really practicing and perfecting this specific meditation and brain exercise. And it's a space that she has a lot of comfort and strength in.
Okay, sorry. I'll move on past that. Sorry, because I can ask a lot of questions, try and understand where you're coming from. But I do hope that she takes that clarinet with her. Did she take the clarinet with her?
Because
it seemed like
she did.
She packed it up. Right. Mm-hmm. So she's really into meditation. And I think that she's really into her extra hobbies. And so I kind of really agree with you, Paul, where she wants to move up. And you know what? Maybe she's better off like multitasking in the admiral position rather than sitting in a beacon forever by yourself. So maybe her apt, right? She has like the aptitude for being in a leadership position, but right now she has to do the groundwork and it's just like not working out for her because she did want to take off very quickly with no fear. So there's a lot to her character. I appreciate how much information she gives us in her action as well as in her like through her hobbies, but also just where she outright gives us context and educates Halen and is like a total beacon whiz.
When I was watching her, I was trying to think of myself as a beacon keeper, thinking that I would probably very much enjoy it and that I would also bring so many hobbies onto the beacon. But knowing myself, it would be like the machine would go off and say, hey, you got to go tell a ship to steer around the dark matter. And that seems to happen like every, you know, several hours. And she doesn't really need to do anything between those several hours. And I personally, I would be like, God damn it, another fucking ship.
Oh, no, but that's a good point, though, because she kind of is there. I mean, Inez, you're totally onto something where she's super into this lifestyle, but she mentioned that, like, it was too close. They were, like, less than 30 seconds before hitting something.
Yeah, wasn't that the case when she was kind of manifesting the date?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. That's what she's talking about.
She's not doing too well at her job.
Well, I mean, she at least got the ship to go around without, like, tearing up floorboards and sticking, like, a stick into the machine to try to get the thing to...
He's not a keeper. Are you hating on Halen?
The fact that the ship did not hit anything and it was successful means that she did do her job exactly right.
Yeah.
I mean, and then she dipped off. So imagine how many ships are going to potentially crash because she's not there to tell them, like, to go away. Yeah, so there you go. But she did her job, you know? What you don't know, you don't know. She's still 100%, even if four ships crash while she's gone, you know? Her status still 100% because she doesn't know. It's fine.
Yes. Schrodinger's cat.
Schrodinger's
cat.
Jiang's yelling at them in Chinese and they don't know Chinese.
Jiang. I'm so sad for Jiang. Oh my gosh. First Bart, now her.
I'm sure that Jiang is sending a transmitted thing in the language that ship needs.
I'm sure you're probably right. I mean,
you're right.
It is an AI.
They are.
It's not helpless, guys.
Okay, never mind.
All right, let's flip to the other half of the episode. Here's a secret that you two don't know about me. But the ghost ship premise is one that I just can't get enough of. When I watched this, my note to the side was like, I need to go watch Event Horizon now. Because it gave me some of the similar vibes of coming aboard this ship, the lights are off, everything's fucked up inside. You're there to maybe fix it up, but there's also this spooky shit happening. I love that premise. If we are ever on the Pod Clubhouse yacht and we see a derelict ship floating around nearby, I'm going to steer us over there and we're going to go on that ship.
I thought you were going to say, we're going to binge watch these shows.
Nope.
We're going to get on a cruise, guys, and we're just going to watch.
I'm down for it. All I heard was I'm going on the yacht. I'm going on the yacht. That's all I heard.
Captain Paul and the other two on the Pod Clubhouse yacht. If there's a ghost ship out there, I'm sorry. We're going to check it out.
We're going to check it out. Okay. Yeah. I'm on it. Aye, aye, Captain.
Captain, my Captain.
What did you guys think of the second half and the big fat tonal shift with kind of she's out of her harmony at this point? By harmony, I mean like internal, you know, wellness, not like
the character. She's outside of her zen space.
There you
gotcha.
Go.
I loved it. I loved it because we got to know her even more. They kind of gave us a lot of that she's got her individual talents and skills. We got her career and ambitions, and we have her connection with her family and ancestry. She's intentionally speaking both English and I'm assuming it's Mandarin. Sorry if it's not. And so now we're seeing her, we got a fun mixture of disgusted, like, how dare you, Halen, like, destroy this space. I love how much she cares so deeply about her role and integrity as a beacon keeper that she's just, like, so visibly just, like, annoyed with him for what he's done, but then also just, like, at peace, at, like, piecing it all back together like a little puzzle. Mm-hmm. I love it. I love it so much. And then she problem solves, gets harmony back, and she's just like, we got to focus on getting this shit back together. So she's a leader. Gabby says she's a leader. She's a leader when she left, and then she's a leader here taking charge because Halen, as you said earlier, Paul, is a fucking mess. So this part of her character and personality, I really enjoyed more. I think the first half, upon meeting her, I don't know, it was kind of a little bit cheesy. There's like some classic little sprinkle of cheese that I felt that was in the script with her. But second half was like rock star.
Something about, and I don't mean to insult Ellen, the actress, but I don't know if she plays clarinet or not. They did a neat job of like editing around whether or not she was playing it. But when you speak of cheese and science fiction instrument playing, for some reason, my mind flashes to Commander William Riker and his trombone and how that never worked. You know, like it just was never convincing that he was playing that trombone ever. Did you buy it, Gabby? Were you like, Will Riker is the best trombone player I've ever seen?
Oh my God, yes. I know. It was horrible. It was so funny. I love it. No, that was not the case in this one. I wasn't like looking at her notes at all, but I do play the saxophone and I know woodwind instruments, and so she looked like she knew what she was playing. But again, I wasn't. Now I'm gonna go back and watch and make sure she's playing the right notes. But that is hilarious. I wish that I hope she's not, and I wish that they didn't even like move her fingers, honestly, just like our boy Riker. Speaking of that, I actually just bought an action figure of his today, so I'm happy we got to bring him up. I found it at Target.
OG Riker with the beard,
hair. They have him, Picard, and Data. I got the set. I mean, it's not a set, but I found them all at the store.
So cute. I love it. And so just for my, just take a second for my one Riker moment is Gabby invited me to join her Comic-Con?
Forced you and your husband, yes, to go.
To go to.
Fan Expo. San Francisco.
Fan Expo and.
Dress up.
And I
in my costumes.
I was Riker.
Yeah, she was Riker. I made her beard.
I was Riker.
I had the beard and everything drawn on me. I'll have to send you a picture.
I designed all of this. I'd like to take full credit. And they look amazing. She's Riker. And her husband is Worf.
Worf.
And I was Data. And my husband was Dr. Crusher. Beverly.
Have you seen the Riker chair memes?
Yes, of course. Oh, wait. I must add, my baby was Data's cat. So it was a hit.
Oh,
and we
yes.
met Dr. Crusher in real life, and she loved the kitty Spot. Just want to shout out.
She is nice. She's very
nice.
She's
amazing.
We got to talk to her in the podcast a long time
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, I heard that. Like, I heard your podcast.
Yeah, she was nice. Mike and I were really ecstatic and trying not to seem like idiot fanboys while talking to her.
I will tell you that I was an idiot fangirl while talking to her, and she was the most gracious, amazing person, like, about it. So next time you should fanboy or tell her that you held it in. Anyway, moving right along back to this.
Moving right along.
But anyway, in the second half, we also get to see Halen, and he's still really depressed, really overwhelmed, also kind of like losing hope kind of status.
Right, but then she came and saved the day.
Yeah, I was really sad when he said, sometimes I think I'm dead too. That just tells you like this is like where he is. But yeah, so now she's come to save the day, and so we'll get to see what that relationship will look like in episode 4.
Oh, yeah. So considering she's like kind of real, I mean, not boy crazy, but kind of schoolgirl boy crazy, it did make me wonder, you know, are we going to get some romantic thing going on between them? You think that's where the writers would be going?
I don't. I don't really have a better explanation than that. But
then just straight but,
no.
I mean, Halen still looks pretty torn up about Aster. And he's still sort of unstable and almost scary feeling to her, even though she's managing to keep her cool. They did some like 2 shots of them where they contrasted how much smaller she was than him. They're both on screen and he's looking massive and she looks not massive. Something about that just made me think there's still a disparity between the two in terms of connecting like that anyway.
I don't think that that's going to happen. She's really ambitious. I think that it is interesting, though, how they kind of really complete each other for success, since he's a really good pilot and she's very handy with the beacon. So it does make me feel like they're kind of the ultimate power couple, because, you know, Aster had her own, like, she was not a team player. She was her own lone wolf. So I think that they are perfect partners, but no romantic stuff. There's just like, if I don't know, there's just no room for it to me, I think. Waste of time for her.
there was a lot of chemistry between Halen and Aster, and it kind of, we saw it manifest into almost like a soulmate, platonic, like soulmate type of camaraderie or kinship that they've created together. It's way too soon to say anything about that, but based on what we see here, I don't think so. Like you all said, not the right headspace. There's an expression that the way to a man's heart is through his stomach, and she made sourdough bread and that didn't create any sparks. So, but I just want to also point out from this particular episode, because I don't know, it kind of bothered me a little bit, but maybe it's not that big of a deal. I just thought he took way too tiny of a bite each time he bit into that loaf of bread, considering that he was taking the bite with like aggression, like, oh man, I'm like starving and I'm eating something really delicious for the first time in forever. And this is brand new to me. And he was like tearing into the bread, but then it was just like the tiniest bite. Like, is he savoring it? Is that why he's not like really like taking a big scarf down? Did they say we don't want you to take more bites more than like halfway through on this scene?
I think Bart civilized him, Inez. That's the answer.
Thank you,
Bart. Yes. Didn't you watch Pirates of the Caribbean?
For real,
like, you take small bites when you're at the table because it's impolite otherwise. Jesus. You're welcome.
Oh, I thought Bart was like silent for most of his tenure with him. So,
no, he wasn't silent. He was making little beeps.
What do you think, Paul?
He did only take that one little nibble and then they were
done
talking.
Maybe it wasn't good. She did.
It was like
she did say it wasn't like totally
three small nibbles.
She said it wasn't like totally ready. Like she said it wasn't the best thing that she had made.
He was like, oh my God. Like he was like, I haven't tasted anything this good. And he was like in awe about her making it. So to him, it's already top quality. And the desperation in that bite, but then it was like three bites. I counted. I watched the episode twice and they were the smallest bite. And I was just so stuck on this. And I'm like, I don't know if this is super believable to me here. And I just need to know if I'm being insensitive or am I missing something? I just felt like I needed him to be more desperate and take it off a bigger chunk if he's going to be that aggressive. If he's going to take little tiny bites, I can see him maybe like keeping it close to his mouth and taking like tiny little like nibbles, like a mouse or something. You know, like I'm going to savor this because I personally do that too. But if I'm going to go the aggressive route, these are big chunks of bites that I'm expecting. Like that bread would have been done in those three bites.
Yeah, but I mean, maybe he was starving. And when you're starving, like you don't take a lot of bites because your tummy hurts when you take big bites. That could also be a thing. He's probably very hungry.
I don't know. Maybe I just don't really buy that just because like that means that he's having some kind of self-preservation and he fucking destroyed this beacon.
Mean self-preservation, that just means your stomach has really shrank, and like it when your stomach shrinks because you've been starving for a long time and then you take a bite, like it hurts and you feel nauseous. So anyway, that could be an explanation, or just like, you know, I'm not gonna say bad acting because I think he's a good actor, but maybe a different vision than yours, Inez. But I did want to just go back a little bit on like the last point with like the cheesiness. The bit of cheesiness that I saw was that, yeah, when she was flying, the set seemed pretty simple and the graphics were very simple, but the light on her face like was, and her movement or just her reaction to the writing, to the flying, like we didn't see her fly through space like we saw some scenes in the first season. And Paul, you mentioned that last season, like about the budget, you know, they're not really putting much into what's going on outside the beacon action.
Yeah. Well, there's that, and there's the possibility that the screeners are not 100% done with regard to visual effects. Sometimes they're not. We've had good experiences here, but there is a little wiggle room that there could be some tweaking between what we see and what they put on there. So,
okay. So anyway, I did like, though, that all in all, there's always a focal point in every scene. And my face is, or my eyes are drawn to that. And her face is the focal point in a lot of these scenes. It's her face, her hands. And I just appreciate just every scene for me in this season. season so far, it's like if you pause it, it is a beautiful cinematography like portrait. And so I think that, I don't know, I think the visual effects in the last season are a little bit different from the ones here. I think now they're playing a lot more with the tones. We see more greens. We see all like feminine energy. And that was like given to us with the warm lights in this episode. I mean, I just kept talking about the lights, the lighting and the cinematography and the visual effects in the last episode.
When Halen flew, his helmet cast blue light on his face, didn't it?
Yeah, more masculine.
And hers was more of a yellow, more like the light in her beacon was.
Yeah, I thought hers was like green when she was flying, but sure, like, yeah, it was lighter. It was, so anyway, I just feel like there have been other shows that are like about one room or something and then people going into that room and things happening and whatever. And that's like what the whole series is. And I just feel like it's a great concept and it's not really executed very well a lot of the times. But I do think that that's not the case with Beacon 23. I think that it's so artful. It's so visually exquisite. It's beautiful. And I see the cheese and I'm like, oh, this is great. These moments maybe are cheesy, but if it's a still shot, it's beautiful. And I deeply appreciate the talent that goes into this, whether it's like the production side, the art side, or the acting. Because again, I thought that Iris / Beacon Keeper 67 / Ellen Wong did such a great job at holding me in. And then she starts talking to Halen. She brings a different energy, right? I love when she's complaining about Olive.
Is he just as bloviating, self-aggrandizing, overstepping, and arrogant as he seems? Or
I take it you're a fan too?
He's a cold-blooded killer.
Because she loves beacon keeping, right? Because it's a calling. It's not a job. Being a soldier is a job. Being a beacon keeper is a calling.
Beacon keeping is a calling, and I answered it humbly.
Have you been real?
And it was really sad when he said, when Inez, like you mentioned, when he said other one mentioned everyone and everything is dead. Am I getting it right? He was super sad. But then she started talking about Olive and how like he like looks like a farmer. And like I felt like in this episode, she was answering a lot of the questions we all have as audience members. And I didn't know if they were just like spitballing it, like just because maybe they got feedback from the first season. And they're like, okay, this girl's going to like be the savior. But I loved it.
Well, we had wondered, what does the universe know about that Milan Olive transformation?
You know, yeah,
she spelled that out, that everyone knows.
Yeah, and that like Olive is a murderer. Is that what you got from it? Like that Olive killed Milan?
Well, the way that she told the story, it makes it sound like she might think so.
Right, because they weren't there and Halen knows.
Does Halen know? Halen wasn't there either, but he's acquainted, as he says, with Olive, and he knows how he operates. So you could believe that Olive does act with a lot of unilateral authority out in the universe. Like he's gonna go mess up the column members currently off camera.
You're right, but Bart did it and Halen wasn't there. Would Bart have told Harmony when she like downloaded his information? Maybe Aster would have known. Wait, I think they did find out.
Didn't Bart tell them a story? Oh, or was that the one? Like, Bart told a story to somebody. Who did he tell a story to?
Mm-hmm. To Keefe.
Oh, wait, no. He told it to Keefe. Okay. Keir. But not to anybody else.
It was Keir, right?
Keir, yes, yep. Keir. Keir was the bearded guy that killed Aster.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, so another thing I loved about her is that she really... Bart... You know, she really respected, she respects the beacon, she respects AI. She was so sad for Bart, and that warms my heart because I'm like, nobody cares about him except this woman from somewhere else. And she came and she paid her respects, but no one else did. And so I was very happy.
What I liked about her is her energy. Like, she de-escalated constantly. You know, Halen was... how Halen was. He was desperate to try to get Harmony. He's so desperate with apparently a pretty low knowledge of actually how to fix her that he just put off this just stink lines, you know, of desperation. And everything that she did you know, after she got up off the floor with her ice pick or whatever, she was very calm and cool and was like, well, let's just fix this place. And
yeah, because she's on a mission.
Well,
yeah. And there's a shift of
compared to Aster. Aster was kind
she's
of
kooky dooks.
Well, and antagonistic a little bit, you know, like you give it focus. To me, I'll give it right back to you. I'm going to have a lot of secrets. And,
yeah. It's because she didn't care about the beacon. She didn't care about anybody except for some cloud outside. She's old news, Paul. Come on. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
She's season one. Okay. She's season one.
Oh my gosh. No, but our girl Iris, she was so sad when she was like, Bart's really dead. And then she asked him for forgiveness. Ugh, that was so respectful. Anyway, though, another thing. So the last thing that I really loved about her is that she, you know, brought Harmony back. And so we got our girl. And though it was not that long that she made an appearance in this episode, I felt like it was really meaningful because, I mean, what a contrast, right? Like last season versus this season. Like Harmony before was like this amazing soldier, like captain. And now, I mean, she's so vulnerable and she's so broken and it's just a completely different side. It's like we're even Halen, right? Like we're seeing the same characters and just the I guess the effects of trauma. And that's pretty cool that they're being consistent with that in this season because so many other shows, right, they have like, oh, here's a horrible thing that happened. And then the next episode, like, we forgot and we never talk about it again. But there's been a good consistency with, like, the character development that, like, it just makes sense. And so we're, at least for me, I'm really appreciating the wide range of, like, acting from these individual actors, especially from Harmony.
Very well said, Gabby. I was super excited to see Harmony back online. It was the case of women empowering Harmony. Sorry. But no, because we got to see Harmony, even though it was such a short amount of time, and you saw the glimpse of her, I don't feel myself. She's clearly traumatized.
Her hands were shaking. You know, she's
very traumatized. She's not herself. So this has got to play into how she restores herself while helping them on their mission in the upcoming episodes. But she's forever changed is what the impression I've got.
Yeah, like Bart was, you know, when he experienced his trauma. And it made me really think, you know, if we could see Bart in like hologram, if like futuristic, improved holographic like form, what would that look like for him? I'm sorry, I keep bringing him up. I need to get over this AI. I'm sorry.
I think he's gone. I know. She ripped his little guts out.
She did, and she apologized. Well, but anyway, we know Harmony, though. Like,
but it was kind of nice, like, having that. It was really nice. Not kind of nice. It was really nice that she did have that moment to honor him, and it's probably maybe also like a play into, you know, we saw her honoring her grandmother. And so this is like part of like who she is. And she's got a solid moral compass and, you know, a clear focus. You know, like she left her post. We know that she is a committed beacon keeper to the core with how she ends up annoyed with how things are at Halen and concerned about things are at Beacon 23. So for her to have left her post only could be for something that is life and death kind of situation. And that's why she had to do it, because in her moral code of everything that she knows about her loyalty to the Beacon Hive, you know, that network and whatnot, like to her, she takes her promise super seriously. And who's to say that this isn't a potential protocol that could be executed if these kinds of triggers and alerts occur? And she just wants to make sure that that he's cared for, because that's what she's expecting. She's trusting the Beacon Network to also do that for her. So she's a really amazing character. And yeah, so like bringing that balance to Halen makes sense.
Yeah. Also, though, she has comic relief that I appreciate. That's also a balance from Halen as well, because he's not funny, not at all. But, you know, when she was talking about how Olive killed his maker.
You know who killed his old maker?
Milan Olive? How do you know that?
I mean, it's an open secret. And once he got rid of Milan, he became the new dad or brother. Yeah, it's that messed up.
And then she said, you know, once he got rid of Milan, he became the new dad. And then she said, like, Now he's playing his weird paternal fantasy with the whole galaxy. It's like, do that on your own time.
And now he's playing out his weird paternal fantasy with the galaxy. It's like, do that on your own time, you know?
That was so funny. And then why does he choose to dress up like a farmer from Parsnip 8? Like, that was, yes. So I just needed to shout out that part. It's like, do that on your own time. So she's such a dynamic character. And that's not something that we've seen so far, I think, with anyone except for Bart. Usually people are just like kind of a straight arrow. You can kind of expect what's coming from them. And with her, you can't, other than she's dynamic and she's diverse and impressive.
Good add to the cast. Good add to the story, I think. It's always nice to have a character like that in such a serious story. I think we already did talk about a little bit, but what do we expect to see next episode? With, if you recall, our predictions for this episode centered around some kind of interest being raised in the events of Beacon 23 and ISA responding. Now, it didn't go the exact way that we thought, but essentially, we were correct. ISA responded. Someone from ISA showed up to see what was up at Beacon 23. In fact, two people are going to show up, or two entities.
Things,
yeah. Yeah. So since we're on a roll, what do we think is going to happen next episode?
Well, if I've learned anything with this, is that I'm always wrong. And it's never going to go the way you really think when you start getting confident. I'm going to say that next episode is just going to be more backstory or more context. And then maybe the episode after we'll pick back up on this.
Oh, man. Like, you know, that's interesting because, you know, Glenn Mazzara has that Walking Dead connection, right? Not that he was responsible for this twist or whatever, but did you ever watch The Walking Dead?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. I think this was the episode where they tried to trick us into thinking that Glenn was dead or some other kind of cliffhanger. And then the next episode that everybody was waiting on was the backstory of Morgan and the Cheese Man.
Okay, then, yeah.
Do you remember that? Do you remember that? It's like, what the fuck? We were not interested in the Cheese Man at this point. So, gag, it could be a giant narrative misdirect next week. This week, that there was a cliffhanger. Next week, it's some other new character, perhaps even the character that we're going to meet. Before we meet them, we get their whole story. That's an interesting take.
Well, you're welcome.
I think that's weak.
Bring it, bitch. What is it?
What
then?
A cop out.
All right, go.
Oh, man. What say you? I'm going to be really upset, Paul, if that is what happens. Oh, you know what? I won't, because at season one, they kind of did that to us too, when they would jump us to other episodes, and those like ended up being
satisfied.
And yeah, we liked that. So you know what, Gabby? That's a welcomed pivot.
You're not allowed. You're not allowed on my wagon. So go find your own. What's your theory?
That's fine. Okay, my theory here is that this story was kind of to help us like reshift, obviously, the dynamics of what's going on in Beacon 23. Now we've got a shift in power of who's going to control the beacon. Obviously, now that is Iris. And Halen now gets to probably just resume back to his old role of being like grunt work and a pilot. Because, you know, they had that moment that intentionally showing us, like, he's telling her, I'm a pilot, because they dodged like that big rock. So
I'm a pilot. I dodged a big rock.
I'm a pilot. Well, they put that in there intentionally. So my assumption is, with that information, it's just letting us know that there's now a shift in the different roles. And so my prediction about this is, now we're going to get back to the storyline. Obviously, we're about to meet who's on Beacon 174. There was like a loud noise after the ship was connected. And I don't know if that was from the ship connecting or if that was from like an actual physical being like moving and causing like the big noise. So I'm excited to see what this is. I'm particularly interested in seeing how Harmony comes and participates. I think that the crew now is the three, even though Harmony is broken. I don't think that we're going to see her like in too big of a struggle to not participate in the survival of this trio now.
whatever happens at the beginning of the episode, I think if there's a conflict or whatever, I think that Halen's focus is still going to be getting off the beacon. Now that there's a ship or two that he might be able to use, that'll be of interest to him, but not until he gets Harmony back into her totem or some other mobile emitter so that he can take her with. He's not going to leave without her. So as long as she's running the beacon, then I think he'll stay.
You think so? You think that he has like a loyalty to Harmony?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And okay. Interesting. Yeah.
He's very desperate to get her back online.
Do you think we're going to see much of Harmony though? Or do you think that this is kind of them like excusing her from the season?
I think she'll come back. I think getting her back as like that quasi-physical presence is a really big priority for him rather than having her stuck in the speakers just doing mundane beacon shit.
And you said that like he was so desperate to bring her back online. I just assumed that that was just for the fact that without her helping him with the beacon, he's going to die on the beacon. Not necessarily that he's got like an emotional loyalty to her.
Oh no, I got that it was like a connection to Aster and...
Because, like, I was just thinking, this is going to sound so bad, but okay, I'll just start off that I love Harmony. She's my favorite character. But if Harmony died, like, would I be sad? I probably would be bummed that a really valuable resource is gone forever. But as far as, like, emotionally invested, I don't know that he, I didn't know that he was, like,
well,
fully
like that.
Well,
I think
I know
what Gabby's going to say to that.
what am I going to say to that? What was I going to say?
She's going to say, fuck you, Inez.
I was going to say, that's why I'm other one, and now you're just other. Dumb bitch. Get off.
Keep it real, Gabby. Come on.
Yeah. I mean, I would definitely be really upset losing Harmony from, like, the valuable resource that, like, she is, but... I don't know that I would say her feelings are like real feelings.
You can just stop talking. It's fine. We can wrap this up, Paul.
Okay.
All right. Well, with that.
Wait, wait, no. High, low, high.
Oh, we high, low, high.
Other. Just you, Paul.
High, low, high. High, meeting Iris. I think she's a valuable ad. Low was, I'll just go with like the date made me very cringy. I didn't enjoy that that part of the episode. And then another high was the ghost ship, the torn up beacon, the lurking around trying to figure out what's going on, the big man with the axe following Iris around, figuring that out from her perspective. You know, I enjoyed all that. What about you?
My high. You go. You can go. Best for last. You go first, other.
I just wanted to make sure that other got a voice.
All right, hit it.
Okay, my high. My high was all of Iris's banter and puzzle solving. That was my favorite. I love her so much. My low was those sad bites, but I'll take into consideration that he was literally starving and he was just... following his tummy. And then my last high was like Halen and Harmony getting saved by Iris. That was really exciting and relief. I knew it had to happen anyway. And I was just really happy to see that follow through.
All right. So my first high was the light action in this episode. I really appreciated just the light telling me how to feel. My low was that, I mean, I'm okay, never mind. I'm changing my answers, by the way, just because I did like the ones that you guys said. Very good points, you guys. My low was that when our girl Iris was asking all those questions we've been wondering, Halen still didn't answer any questions about the timeline, and I loved that. I loved and hated it, how he's just like mumbling and gives some dumb one-liner when she's like, how long have you been here? And then he just says some dumb shit like, oh, wouldn't you like to know, sort of vibe. So that was my low. So I'm like, okay, thanks, writers. We don't need to know. That's fine. And then my last high is the part where Beacon Keeper 67 respected Bart and apologized and moved right along.
Sort of like after killing an animal, taking the meat from an animal, right? The beliefs that thank the animal before you actually go through with that process, right?
Wow, that's not what I was thinking at all. No, I was thinking like...
Well, I mean, she took the guts out of it.
She gutted Bart.
You guys.
Took all those innards out.
Okay, my low is this conversation. Good night.
That's funny. All right, well, that's our coverage for the third episode of Beacon 23. As we teased earlier, you can expect some interviews to come on this podcast with creators in front of and behind the camera. We'll let you know as those things develop. If you like this podcast, please remember to rate, review, and subscribe to it on iTunes, Spotify, Audible, YouTube, wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you leave a comment somewhere, we'll try to address it and get back to you. Thanks a lot.
Yay, yay, yay.
Thank you for listening. This has been an original Pod Clubhouse production. Pod Clubhouse is a podcast network dedicated to encouraging collaboration among podcasters and friends to bring a fresh voice and diverse perspective on a wide array of content. Please visit and leave a comment for us at podclubhouse.com. Rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast feeds on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can find us at Pod Clubhouse. Our DMs are always open, and we'd love to hear from you.
Pod Clubhouse.